from 6 on 2FM.
Thanks to the two Johnnies, it's Monday the 17th of April and this is Game On. Coming up today, Brendan Devaney on Ulster Drama in Omagh as Monaghan stunned Tyrone with that late goal.
You would think if Monaghan get the equalising score here, we would go into out of time and it's extra time. Maybe they might get something a bit more here.
Goal!
Brilliant from Ryan O'Toole! I thought he would do the sensible thing and pop it over the bar. But the Monaghan supporters here and the faithful have gone apoplectic. He got a point in the first half. This time he cut in from the right-hand side. It's a two-point lead for Monaghan.
Yes, Ulster football is the brand leader. Alan Colley is in studio to chat association football, including plenty of drama in the League of Ireland and another defeat to Arsenal's lead in the Premier League title race.
Finally, you'll know, title race talk, it may well go up a few notches now. What kind of discussions will you have with your players to kind of cope with that?
The same. I don't know how many notches are. They were 3 months ago, 6 months ago. It's always there. We can control, we can control. Fortunately, we can control because we can play much better than what we did after the tunnel, and this is what we have to focus on.
Plus in rugby, Keane Tracy is with us to discuss big Irish performances in the URC, as well as another defeat for the Ireland in the Women's Six Nations. I'll eventually get that out. If you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
Game On 2FM.
Yes, hello there, good evening. Great to have your company on a Monday. Ruby Walsh, Keane Tracy, Alan Colley and myself, Shane Dawson. It is a packed studio, gentlemen, and there is so much to get through. Before we look forward to this evening's match, Leeds and Liverpool, there is the small matter of reflecting on all of the weekend sport. So Gaelic football, rugby and Premier League. And Ruby, I suppose, let's just go around the houses first off. What was the weekend's highlights? We usually do this on a Monday.
What was the weekend highlight for me? Well, I was in Aintree, and I must say, after meeting Derek Fox before racing on Saturday, Shane, and discussing his injury and the issues he had with his collarbone and shoulder, to see him go 4.25 miles in Corrick Rambler and defy, push himself through the pain barrier, was a sporting highlight for me.
Yeah, certainly a feel-good story as well, coming back from injury, as you mentioned. Ruby, Keane Tracy, what was your weekend highlight?
I suppose with the way the rugby fixtures fell this weekend, I was actually at home, so I wasn't at a game, so I got to see the Leinster game first, then Munster was on, and I was double screening that with the Ireland women's game, and then finish it off with Connacht in the evening. So I suppose that the highlight of it all, you'd have to say, was probably Munster's win, but it was really exciting to see Sam Prendergast get his debut for Leinster as well. So a good weekend all round for the provinces, 4 bonus point wins, but the downer is obviously, I'm sure we'll get to it, is the Ireland women's team in the Six Nations who lost again.
Absolutely. So Ruby's highlight was horse racing, Keane's was rugby. Alan Colley, is yours football?
Well, I have to give a mention to Derek Fox, his fellow Sligo man as well, Shane. So I'll back that.
There's going to be a Sligo man more famous than you now.
Fair play to him, yeah. It's absolutely amazing to win it once, but to win it twice is incredible. So and going through the pain barrier as well. So that was a huge moment watching the race. I loved it on Saturday. But I'm going to go for two who were under the radar, Shane, and they probably won't even feature in our football chat with all that went on over the weekend. But two managers who I feel have been disrespected by plenty in the past, but are doing phenomenal jobs at the moment with their respective clubs, and that's Unai Emery of Villa. And I watched the match Saturday morning, they're absolutely incredible, and the change in what he's brought to that team as well, and the way they're playing, and 5 wins on the bounce has them hovering on the European places. So he's one. And Roy Hodgson, who came back into the job at 75 years of age, Villa or Crystal Palace couldn't score a goal, and now they can't stop scoring goals, and they've won 3 on the bounce. And I've always had great time for Roy Hodgson as well, a brilliant football man, person, whatever you want to say. And they're two who probably would go under the radar in a normal chat, but it's nice to give them a mention, I think.
Happy days. I don't mean to put you on the spot, but how did the local team do that we were giving a mention to on Friday?
Oh, they did well, yeah. Did very well, Shane, but they're only preparing for the tournament, obviously. It's
sorry.
To come in June.
Oh, sorry, so my apologies.
They're trying to raise a few quid and, you know yourself, and get themselves ready. So.
What's the name of the team again?
Merville United.
Merville United, there
good
you
man.
Go. My sporting highlight was Shelburne securing a 2-2 victory in Talla. That's the way I'm spinning it. 2-2, a 2-2 win.
And you haven't taken off the top since.
But and how pessimistic you were here Friday night, and I told you they'd do well, you see.
Yeah,
you're a sports presenter on national radio. You're Radisha Adelecki, Daniel Whiffen, rugby teams winning everywhere, and you're stuck on a draw for Shells.
Yeah, 2-2 win. Listen, it's your personal sporting highlight. All right, you know what, Ruby? Let's give all of the Team Ireland record breakers a mention, because as Ruby said that on a very sincere note, it's been a smashing weekend of sport for Irish athletes, because Daniel Whiffen broke three Irish records over the weekend. The latest was setting a new mark in winning the 800 metre freestyle at the Stockholm Open Swim Meet in Sweden. In breaking the record, Whiffen posted a second world top time and took 2 seconds off the Irish senior time, finishing in 7 minutes 44.45 seconds. He now leads the 2023 world rankings both in the 800 metres and 1500 metre freestyle. Whiffen swam a blistering 14 minutes 34.91 seconds in the 1500 metre final, knocking over 15 seconds off his previous Irish record. That time is the fastest in the world this season. And then of course on Thursday he set a new Irish record in the 400 metre freestyle, claiming gold in that discipline. So next up for Whiffen will be a number of preparation meets in Europe ahead of the World Swimming Championships in Japan in July. That will be the first opportunity for the County Down man to post a qualification time for the Paris 2024 Olympic Games. Rhys McClenaghan claimed European gold in the pommel horse event at the 2023 European Artistic Gymnastics Championships in Turkey. The current world champion now has 2 European golds to his name after coming out on top in Glasgow back in 2018. Just 24 hours after setting a new Irish women's 200 metre record, Rashida Adeleke set a new national 400 metre landmark at the Tom Jones Memorial meeting in Florida. In doing so, Adeleke broke the elite world class barrier of 50 seconds for the first time in her burgeoning career. She clocked 49.9 seconds and finishing second to the American Britain Wilson. So certainly a memorable weekend for the talented Tala athlete. 22-year-old Ben Healy was pleased with a second place finish at the Amstel Gold Race in the Netherlands over the weekend. Second to the best in the world. I can't be unhappy with that, the Irish national time trial champion said afterwards. Double Tour de France winner Tadej Pogacar came out on top. Healy spent much of the 253-kilometre race in the front group, a 16-strong contingent moving clear with about 100 kilometres to go. In Taekwondo, Jack Woolley won gold at the Spanish Open today. He beat the current Olympic, over the weekend, I should say. He beat the current Olympic and world champion in the final from Italy. So great work from Jack and his coach, Robert Taff. Tam Nguyen made history, winning Ireland's first ever medal at a senior weightlifting European Championships with a bronze medal finish. Really nice story, because Tammy, who gave up competing for nearly 7 years to start a business and a family, was in floods of tears after winning Ireland's first ever European Championships medal. And finally, Republic of Ireland and Turkey have qualified for the FIFA E-Nations Playoffs 2023. Ireland finished fifth in their group but overcame Croatia 2-1 in aggregate and Scotland 3-2 in aggregate to progress via the second chance bracket, which is effectively the backdoor system. So very well done to all of the team there. Now Ruby, that's rounded up concisely.
Shane, where do you stand on e-gaming as a sport?
I'm so glad Ruby asked that, because that was what was going through my head as well. Come on, e-gaming.
It's personally not for me, but it's a massive market.
But it's not a sport.
It's on Sky Sports now and everything. I was flicking around the other night and it was on.
I don't think that's a barometer at all. I've seen a lot of things on Sky Sports.
Crazy that it's on getting TV coverage, yeah. Isn't it?
It's mad. I know this is going to turn into just 4L lads now, like, give it out, but kids these days watching.
I don't know where you put it. It's gaming, you're playing something, but I honestly don't know. I just don't see it. I suppose I see a sport as in person v person or team v team.
But it is
this
person
is,
v person.
I suppose, but you have to use a computer to do it. I don't know. Is it a computer sport? It's a computer game, isn't it?
Yeah, no, it is. But it's person v person. The same in, but like your game console is just the apparatus that you use. In tennis, you need a racket.
Yeah. That's fair enough. Yeah, you're putting up a strong argument here, but
you know, you need a racket, fast feet, really quick hands, and a serious level of fitness.
So really good reactions, really quick hands,
a good thumb.
Good 2 thumbs, I'd say. Good hand reaction. I say the reaction speeds,
hand eye coordination.
Like, you know, I'd say the reaction speeds of your top esport competitors are up there with your F1 drivers and athletes. For hand coordination.
I suppose you could argue it's as physically demanding as chess.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people that I not to bring darts into this argument, but a lot of people will look at darts and say that's not a sport.
It is a sport.
Like I'd say it is, but it's like, well, listen, Anthony
Snooker. Darts.
Yeah.
Don't get me started on snooker. The love of my life. So don't even try and compare the skill levels in snooker to e-gaming.
I don't know. Have you ever played e-sports?
I know it's not as hard as
you say. It's as easy to get a 9-dart finish or a 147 and all.
The 147 is harder.
Definitely.
I'm not good at snooker, but I'd say I'd quicker get a 147 than I would beat the top E players in the world.
I'd definitely get a 147 before I get a 9-dart finish anyway, I know that.
No, you'd be surprised, Ruby. Few hours
I'd be
practice.
Very surprised.
a bit of practice and I'd say you'd be handy enough at the darts. The snooker's a lot more harder.
Well, I'm going to make it my business now, Ruby, that we're going to follow the Republic of Ireland eSports team as they embark on their nation's playoffs for 2020.
Just a conversation.
Oh, and also mentioned before, Ruby, I do want to pick your brain on the Grand National, of course, but Ireland are facing a late battle to avoid defeat in their first ever test against Sri Lanka, who tightened their stranglehold on the second day of the series opener in Galle. Sri Lanka declared on 591 for six. Ireland's bowlers lacked the cutting edge and their opponents darted along at 4.5 and over before spinner Prabhat Jayasuriya took 5 for 42 as Ireland limped to a 117 for 7 at the close. Ireland rebuilt from a humble position of 4 for 2 with James McCullum and Harry Tector putting on 70, but they were left in a heap thereafter, troubled by Jayasuriya's dip and drift on a turning pitch. Now that's a sport, cricket. 5-day
cricket.
Do you
think there's many other Shells fans now you could have a conversation with about the cricket?
Yes, in fact there is a strong cohort of four or five of us, not to get too personal, but Dara, John, Wordo, yeah, there's a few of us that are big. I've been up to Belfast, haven't been up to Sion Mills, that's on the to-do list.
He gives you a lot of stick about the Shells thing.
Yeah, I know, but like, you know, I can bat it off. Good
Shane,
defensive
I'm with you.
Shot.
I'm
good
with defensive you. Shot. You know where I stand on this.
Yeah.
I'm with you.
Ruby, talk to me about horse racing. Enlighten me, the Grand National. There was plenty of drama. So Derek Fox was obviously the good story. Obviously the Grand National itself was delayed and that caused some issues for some horses. Like, we're not going to get into the debate about, I suppose, that on the larger scale, but well, lessons we learned in how jockeys and the horses and organisers perhaps prepare for these races and try and combat these issues if there might be delays.
I don't know, Shane. You look at Aintree, it's a huge site. I mean, the perimeter of Aintree is well over 2 miles round. The Grand National course is 2 miles round, so you put the perimeter outside that. It's a huge perimeter. It's 75,000 race course. Like, security was tight. There was a huge police presence. But I suppose what added to it and what people are saying about some of the horses getting probably a bit more excited than maybe they usually would, or in jockeys too, the protesters, I don't mind the delay because there could be a delay at the start of any race for a horse spreading a shoe or a horse getting loose going to the start or anything. Delays can happen. But this created a really weird atmosphere in Aintree on Saturday. And it was tense, it was uptight, it wasn't a boisterous start to the Grand National. The 15 minutes or so for the delay when people didn't know what was happening, they obviously delayed the jockeys, they delayed the horses, but it just created tension and a lot of tension, and you could feel that everywhere. Now, I was behind it all. I was sitting in the ITV trucks, I was watching it all, and it created tension, and that didn't add to the in a good way to the race. There's no way it could have. But I don't think that would add in a good way to any sporting event, not just horse racing. It was very tense, and it was disappointing, I suppose, that to watch it all. Animal Rising were behind the protesting, and everybody has a right to protest. Everyone has a right to their own beliefs, and but I do feel it has to be done in a peaceful way, and I'm not sure storming a race course was a peaceful way. It's not in my eyes anyway. And I must say, to watch it, there was a lot of huge police and security, but I was watching it on the ITV cameras. There was a lot of local people from Fazakerley, from Aintree, that were helping the police and helping the security. They were taking at ladders off people. They were herding the Animal Rising people in the one direction of the police. It was incredible to watch the local people of Liverpool come to the aid of their race.
Mm. Well, it means a lot for the locality. I mean, it's the Aintree Grand National. Like, that's the, you know, and it's the area and everything around there. And listen, it is, I suppose, something that will be teased out a lot more. I know there's been a lot of conversations had around it, but on the course, from the racing aspect, obviously you mentioned the highlight of Derek Fox coming back from injury and winning on Cork Rambler. Overall, I suppose, what were your festival highlights, Ruby?
Oh, I thought it was a great week of racing. Obviously, Davy Russell got the send-off that he wanted, Shane. You know, it didn't go right for him in Cheltenham, and to be fair, it was great that he didn't leave his career that way, and that was down to his wife Adele, making him go back and go to Aintree and ride at Aintree, and he rode a couple of winners, and he got to walk away the way he should. Someone that's had a career like Davy Russell has. He rode two winners, Irish Point and Jerry Calam, two Grade One winners, and like, he bowed out on a high rather than a low like Cheltenham would have been. So that was great to see. Mark Walsh, who's had an up and down season, some of the rides he gave horses, and to watch him particularly on Sire de Burley, we speak about what's a sport, how fit are jockeys. When you watch Mark Walsh push and cajole Sire de Burley for three miles on Saturday, pull up when the race was over, turn to Alice Plunkett, who was doing the interview, and speak to her without missing a beat in his breath. Well, I took my hat off to that. I thought that was, I admire fit people, and he's kept himself really fit through injury. And as I said, Derek Fox, like, I don't know for certain, but I just know from looking at people and know who I stand myself, I'd say there's a fair chance he's a broken collarbone. I'd say that's really? his biggest issue. But he wasn't going to miss the Grand National.
Wow. That's, I suppose, that comes full circle back to our conversation that it was yourself, myself and Alan, we were having a few weeks ago about retired sports people, and Ruby, you made the point then about just that level of fitness, which is just astounding. And the collarbone, that's just, I'm not just saying it, and like, it's kind of half tongue in cheek, but I do mean it sincerely. Like, you're a different breed, jockeys. Like, to put yourself into that situation, I was never a professional sports person.
It's the biggest race of the year. And is it, Alan, you might back me up here, which one of the Irish soccer players was trying to trick Mick McCarthy, or trick Jack, was it, in Florida, into playing? It wasn't Mick McCarthy, maybe Jason McAtee or Andy Townend. When you get big games, players want to play. You get big races, jockeys want to ride. And you could see it in Derek when he got off the elbow with his right hand, when he went to cajole Corey Grambler, he got his right arm out, and all of a sudden it didn't go as high as he intended. You could see him stopping and stalling where he was, but chances don't present themselves to people every day of the week to win a Grand National, and he wasn't going to leave it behind him for 8 minutes of pain.
No, that's true. I'm going to plug the goalkeepers union. I couldn't remember his name. Bert Troutman was the goalkeeper who played with a broken neck for Manchester City back in the 30s. Played on, not a bother to him. So yeah, elite level athletes, there you go.
It's not even just the physical injuries, it's the mental capacity of these guys is remarkable, really, across all sports. Like, you know, you could have physical injuries, but like, you think back to, like, you know, off the top of my head, like someone like Conor Murray, how he managed to play in the Six Nations after what happened to his dad earlier this year was remarkable. There's so many instances, and I agree with you, Shane, when you're kind of not in it, you just go, wow, these men and women who are like professional sports people are just incredible. Their mental and their physical capacity, it's remarkable.
Getting back on the horse, like, figuratively and literally, for in your case, Ruby, and everything, having, when you have big setbacks from injuries, even like, say, I'm not just saying it because another goalkeeper, say Petr Cech, just off the top of my head, when he got that head injury and then had to wear the scrum cap playing forward and everything, just like putting yourself into that state again, Ruby, is just like, that's something that I'll never wrap my head around. I'll listen to all the podcasts and all the sports psychologists and everything else, but just to really think about that.
It's determination. It's get up and get on with it. It is about the easiest way of explaining it, Shane. But to me, even now, and I notice it probably more so now than I did before, but when you look at players on a pitch now, when they get injured, and you can see physical pain, and then you see in their faces the mental pain of the realisation of being injured, of being out of the game, of the opportunities they're going to miss. I think when you look at that pain is always much worse than the physical pain.
Mm. No, it is. And that's a very valid point. It's a conversation that we could continue to have. However, we must move on to Gaelic football, because Brendan Devaney is on the line now as well. Brendan, have you ever played through the pain barrier in any big matches?
Well, I did actually play with three broken ribs in Ulster Club Championship 1 year. I got an injection from Jimmy the Doc, the famous ex-sporting minister at halftime, and I played the whole match. And I'll tell you worse than that, I was out in the Voodoo nightclub that night, and the following night then, I tried to lie down in bed because I had the night before, but I was pissed. But that following night, I ripped a lung and nearly bloody died. So that's my playing through the pain story. It nearly cost me my time on earth here.
But the pain barrier of playing is nowhere near as bad as the pain of missing out.
Yeah. Well, I
Brendan was afraid of missing out on was Voodoo Nightclub.
I'd be in the show one day and I was going to play to the parade so I could catch up with her. You know yourself.
Gentlemen, I got to corral us all back. to the weekend's football, because as I mentioned in the intro, Ulster football is the brand leader. Brendan, we were having a chat on Friday and it was all going to be a case of, listen, I know it was a bit of a rush chat, but two matches, they mightn't have that much entertainment. Boy, were we wrong.
Oh, 100%. And listen, we love being proved wrong in these things. I'm just wondering about the evolution of the championship and how, you know, we thought Ulster would be the one province where we mightn't get caught up in that thing about like main losing, doesn't really matter. They're raising bigger prizes. But we thought that Ulster Championship is one that teams really, really want to win. Maybe less so than Tyrone and a lot of other sides in there. But certainly, this game had a bit of an air about it that, yes, this is part of one competition, but there's a bigger picture coming down the line. Maybe that's why it was open. I think Tyrone actually went back to some of the tactics of their All-Ireland victory a couple of years ago, went man-to-man, pushed up in Monaghan, and then Monaghan didn't want to do in the first half. They were coming running through. Players, obviously, were taking up positions. They couldn't drop in and sweep. And really, the Tyrone forward machine looked first class, 4 points up. And really, Monaghan with sixes and sevens. And how we predicted the game, maybe the goal looked like it was in place. But as you said, Shane, never write off teams, and particularly this Monaghan battle-hardened team. You know, they have a brilliant mix of youth and experience. Their second-half performance was absolutely phenomenal.
On that second-half performance, Tyrone had a five-point lead at half-time as well. Like, how much was it a case of Monaghan impressed or Tyrone where a bit lacklustre in their approach? Like, what will both teams take away from it? Because you're going in that, yes, there's an Ulster title to win. Obviously, Monaghan are still in the hunt for that, Tyrone and aren't. But at the end of the day, they're both going to be in the pot for the All-Ireland Series.
I think Monaghan, if you heard some of the players after the game, with half-time, you know, half-time's a brilliant time in football in terms of if you have a good bunch of players, a good manager, you assess what's happening there. And they were saying, Tyrone were dictating the pace, dictating how the game was going to go. They had to flip it on their head. They made a few changes. The biggest that was probably Conor McCarthy, who is this enigma of a player. He's one of the most talented players in Ireland, but you could go through a game without seeing him. They switched him back to half-back, and some of his deep runs were unbelievable. Began then, his impressions on the game coming out, they switched, obviously, Canada, young O'Toole went across the hamlet happened in the first half, but that tightened everything up a small bit. But obviously, an extra Darren Cheese coming into play, Shane Carey coming in as well. And Monaghan sent to Rome were vulnerable. As soon as they started to come on the loop and come in attacks, and particularly the runs of Bannigan and the next of Conor McCarthy, they just seemed like they could penetrate the Tyrone defence. And Tyrone's defence looked very, very shaky. In fact, you know, a few times Monaghan kicked the ball in, I thought, if they just ran it, they either get the foul or a goal. And the two goals from the defensive perspective were terrible giveaways in the second half. But for Monaghan, you'd have to say it was first-class play. And this Monaghan machine that's in there, you know, there's just something about them. We're wondering from these teams are a brilliant finish to the league, but certainly it was advantage to Rome getting into the game. But you'd have to say hats off to the management of Monaghan, Billy Coy and his crew. This Billy's very well got there. You know, coming into this season, obviously Drew Whiting, Colin Walsh, these guys retired. But of course Kevin Garrett came in, Will McFarland, they were all making a debut, and of course Ryan O'Toole making a debut. I mean, what a moment for the lad. I mean, to strike a goal in that fashion later on, I mean, I just couldn't believe what I was seeing. It was phenomenal stuff. And as you said, also championship for that game to end up 1-8, 22-17, and never in a million years would I envisage that. So it was a better game of football.
And that Ryan O'Toole most certainly has a desire to play to win and not play to lose, taking the percentage of his shot going in the back of net rather than over the bar. But there was a second game as well. Brendan, Derry were just way too strong for Fermanagh, 3-17 to 2-8, and they were so slick, Derry.
Yeah, listen, you talk about well-drilled teams, and just what I was saying there, Ruby, the coaching that you have there with Monaghan, you could see the tackling, you know, the likes of the killing of Bell dropping back in. All the tackling was smart. And it was 1-1, it was good, but then they were getting numbers back, and the other end of the pitch, Tyrone weren't doing it. But with this Derry team, I mean, who would want to play them? Terrible crowd at Brewster Park, I suppose. It says something about maybe Fermanagh thought, people thought would happen. And because of this Derry team, how they tactically play, they are a nightmare to play against. But you would say, in terms of doing what they're good at, it was the tactics, I suppose, of Fermanagh that surprised us most. in terms of what Tyrone were doing, I mean, Tyrone had the talent to go man to man and go at a team like Monaghan, and I think it might have proved their undoing a bit in that second half. But certainly for Fermanagh, everybody was left gobsmacked at this daring machine, because we all know that the only way to take on a rigid back of defence, you have to mirror it, and you have to then try and exploit and maybe catch a team late on or get a goal or whatever. But the way Fermanagh approached the game was a big, big surprise. And I know you can't say down the road at Crow Park that type of tactic can be picked up right. We've seen Dublin do it in the second half against Derry a few weeks ago at Crow Park. So the bigger teams at Crow Park, very different thing to Brewster Park there the last night. So I think Fermanagh probably made this game a bit easier for Derry than it should have been.
Well, it's certainly going to make for an interesting Ulster semi-final repeat of last year, as Derry and Monaghan will square off once again. It's Tailteann Cup football for Fermanagh this year, and Tyrone will be left to lick their wounds for a couple of weeks before getting back into the All-Ireland round. Robin, Brendan Devaney, thank you very much for taking the call. We're going to be chatting football a little bit later, but up next we're going to be chatting rugby with Keane Tracy.
Game on.
Rugby.
Welcome back to Game On. After an exciting weekend of URC action, where does one start? Well, Keane Tracy, I'm going to start with a fellow Kildare man, and that's Sam Prendergast, out of Newbridge College, 20 years of age, senior debut, 14 points, and Leinster never looked like winning till the very end.
Yeah, it was an incredible victory, really, when you think about how far behind they were at half-time. You look at how inexperienced the team was. Sam Prendergast playing 10. They obviously had a couple of experienced guys like Jason Jenkins and Reese Ruddock in the team. But by and large, it was a very, very young team. And they were playing at altitude as well, which I think has kind of been overlooked a little bit. So you'd be imagine that they'd be actually flagging in the second half, not kind of turning around. And I think it was a credit to their fitness, really. And yeah, Sam Prendergast was pretty impressive. It wasn't perfect by any means. It was never going to be with such a changed team, but I think he just showed why there is so much excitement around him. I see Leo Cullen, you know, coming out after the game saying that we need to kind of keep everything in check here. But like, it's okay to be excited about young players. It always kind of annoys me, like, when, you know, people are like, oh, don't, like, hype them up. Like, you know, I remember, like, when Gavin Bazunu and Caoimhín Kelleher were coming on the scene as well. It's always like, you know, but, like, why can't we get excited about these young players? So, clearly, Sam Prendergast has a long way to go. He's fresh off, you know, leading Ireland under-20s to a Grand Slam when he was the standout player. You know, the comparisons are already being drawn between him and Johnny Sexton, which I think is probably a little premature. But interestingly enough, I was chatting to Mark Sexton, Johnny Sexton's younger brother, who was the attack coach for the Ireland under-20s for a piece I did a few weeks ago. And I asked him about, you know, the comparisons between his brother and Sam Prendergast. And he said, no, they're fair. So, I mean, when Johnny Sexton's brother is saying that, you know how high this guy's ceiling is. So his big challenge, I think, will be, you know, getting enough opportunities over the next while. I think, you know, a lot of provincial supporters are hoping maybe he might go to like a Connacht or wherever, but I don't think there's any chance that Leinster are going to leave this guy go. He looks like he's going to be the real deal. It'd be great to see him get more game time against the Bulls this weekend, because realistically he's probably not going to feature in the URC or the Champions Cup running. And I see people even, you know, touting him as a bolter for the World Cup. I think for the World Cup squad, I think if we're being realistic, that's probably not going to happen unless there's several injuries. But certainly the excitement is justified around this guy.
So Sam Prendergast, Vaka Abeladze, Liam Turner, Michael Milne, Rob Russell, Chris Cosgrave, they all star in this Leinster performance. So is that, I suppose, the devil's advocate argument to the counterpoint of Leinster have too much money, and proof that Leinster have too much money? Well, sure, look who they brought in now as a coach at the end of the season.
Yeah, like, I mean, we'll get to that, but I mean, if you look at the way Leinster played and the personnel that they had, it was a copy and paste job. Like, that is so difficult to do. Like, some of the tries that they scored, like Liam Turner's try, for example, was like Gary Ringrose scoring the try. So the Leinster DNA is so ingrained in these young guys. I mean, even despite the fact that Stuart Lancaster wasn't even over in South Africa, Leo Cullen has flown home back to Dublin this week, is my understanding, because he's basically going to allow Sean O'Brien to be the head coach this week. So the idea is that Stuart Lancaster has been back in Dublin with Leinster's first choice players, getting them ready for Toulouse the weekend after this weekend coming. And now Leo Cullen would ordinarily have stayed on, but he wants Sean O'Brien to have the experience of running a team. So this just shows you how forward thinking that Leinster are. What an opportunity for Sean O'Brien to lead the week this week. Obviously Neen Arbour coming in, but I think it's a bit of an easy stick to beat Leinster with. Of course they have resources that other people in the country don't have, with the population and all that. Of course their budget is massive, but if you look at like English teams' budgets, plenty of them don't have the success. You look at the likes of Bath, Bristol, they've spent crazy money over the last couple of years without having the success. So I think Leo Cullen and Stuart Lancaster have come out, you know, a bit spiky, but I think they have a right to be, because what they're doing behind the scenes, and Shane, you touched on it there, that the players that they're producing are all, majority of them, homegrown. So they deserve massive, massive credit. It's, there's a lot of factors at play why Leinster are so good, but they shouldn't shy away from that. You know, I think it's up to basically everyone else to get there, rather than, you know, trying to haul Leinster back to the rest of the provinces. So it's a tricky gap to bridge, but yeah, Leinster just flying it.
A double question now for you, Keane, I suppose, because we were talking with Sam Prendergast there. You mentioned earlier about Munster being a particular highlight for you, that victory, hard fought victory over in South Africa as well. Just how big a win is that for Munster's season? And also, what now for Joey Carberry, who wasn't included in that squad?
Yeah, it was. That's a tough one to bittersweet pill for him to swallow. I think when I saw the team being named on Friday, I assumed that there must have been an injury, because look, Jack Crowley started ahead of Joey Carberry for the Sharks game in the Champions Cup a couple of weeks ago, and if that's fair enough, I don't think you could argue with that. But I think it was a massive surprise to see Ben Healy on the bench. Like, this is a guy who's leaving Munster in a few weeks, and by the way, he was outstanding when he came on and was played a really big part in Munster seeing out what was, like you said, Shane, a massive victory. So it's been a really tricky season for Joey Carberry. You think he's lost his place in the Ireland squad. He's lost his place as the backup to Johnny Sexton. If the World Cup squad was being picked in the morning, he's highly unlikely to be on the plane to France. He probably needs an injury or two to go his way. The problem for him is now that Jack Crowley is playing 10 ahead of him, because even when he lost his place in the Ireland squad, Jack Crowley was playing 12. But now Jack Crowley has overtaken him as Munster's first choice out half as well. So look, it's very, very tricky for him. I think his injury problems have been well documented, and we spoke about this earlier on with Ruby in terms of the horse racing. I just don't know how much his career was nearly ended by that ankle injury that he suffered in the build up to the 2019 World Cup. He never should have went to Japan in the World Cup, because he clearly wasn't fit. He ended up aggravating the injury, and he's never really been the same since. So that's tough. I think he's still young enough to bounce back, but his problem is Jack Crowley looks like the real deal. Like, we talk about Sam Prendergast, but Jack Crowley is a serious talent, and he's starting to show it. I thought he was really good at the weekend as well. So look, it's a tough time for Joey Carberry. I think they've got a big decision to make this weekend against the Sharks, but like, given how well they played, I wouldn't imagine they'd be making too many changes. And I think Joey Carberry would have probably looked at this period, you know, it was a really big 2 weeks for Munster going to South Africa, and while, you know, he might have expected to been on the bench, I think he would have looked at it as a chance to put himself in the shop window. And all of a sudden he's facing the prospect of coming back from South Africa without having played a single minute, and that's going to seriously hurt his chances of getting on the plane to France.
Another man who's trying to fight his way into that Irish team had a good game in South Africa at the weekend, and that was Gavin Coombs.
Yeah, he was, like, in fairness, Gavin Coombs is nearly an 8 out of 10 for Munster every week, Ruby, and I don't think that's up for debate at all. He's been consistently excellent for Munster. He's just found it really tough for whatever reason to break into that Irish team. Obviously, you know, Caelan Doris is arguably the best number 8 in the world right now. You have Jack Conan, who's found his best form, and Max Deegan's been picked ahead of him as well at different times. So it was a massive performance from the pack, the Munster pack, and Gavin Coombs was central to that. I thought Orgy Snyman was exceptional as well. You can really see why Munster, you know, were keen to keep him on board. A lot of people might have said, you know, he's on so much money, he's had so many injury problems, you're better off to cut him loose. But Munster wanted to keep him because he is such a rare specimen in terms of what he can do on and off the ball. So my big concern from a Munster point of view going into that game was the pack were going to be overpowered, as they were against the Sharks in Durban a couple of weeks ago. But to be fair to them, they stood up. You had a guy like Stephen Archer in the autumn of his career, it's fair to say, play 80 minutes against a Springboks front row who they really held their own against them. And yeah, like, they scored two tries from the maul, Munster did earlier on, and I thought that was a massive psychological advantage, because that's the kind of thing that you'd imagine they were going to try and move away from the maul to try and beat the Stormers out wide. But to be fair to them, they took them on up front, and it set the platform for what was a massive, massive victory that secures them a playoff spot in the URC and all but ensures that they're going to be in the Champions Cup next season. They do still have a bit of work to do to guarantee that, but the bonus point win that they got against the Stormers puts their destiny firmly in their own hands going into the Sharks game this weekend. I think that's all they could have asked for.
Connacht needed a big performance as well. Bundiaki, Mac Hansen, Caelan Blade, Niall Murray, Conor Oliver, plenty of players stood up.
Yeah, Connacht looked dead and buried a couple of months ago, to be fair, and their turnaround has been outstanding, really, you'd have to say. And yeah, Bundiaki, I think he touched on it in his interview after the match. I think he felt like he owed the Connacht supporters a big performance. He played his part in Ireland winning the Grand Slam, and obviously he's had his issues at Connacht, but he was brilliant. You saw the difference that Jack Harty made as well, and like a guy like Caelan Blade is playing out of his skin as well. So yeah, Connacht, it looks like they're going to be in the playoffs as well, so it was another good weekend for them too.
Cian, I'm conscious of time, but I do want to get your opinion on the Irish women's team as well. But before I do, just Jack Nienbar and Scott Fardy. So yeah, going to Leinster and Connacht respectively, what will they bring?
Yeah, two defence coaches anyway. So Neen Arbour came a bolt out of the blue. I don't think anyone had any wind of it. So like you mentioned earlier, Leo Cullen's coming back from South Africa. He's coming back from South Africa with the World Cup winning coach. Having been signed up, I'd say there was a bit of business going on over there as well. So look, it's a remarkable appointment, really. Like there's a lot of, I would say, concern around Leinster losing a coach of Stuart Lancaster's calibre. But he's after going out now and replacing him with Jack Neen Arbour. So he'll come in and be the defensive coach, really, is what I think. You'd have Andrew Goodman will probably look after the attack. And more sort of things, and then you'll have Scott Fardy, who's coming in to Connacht as well, and he's obviously less experienced, but what a career, playing career he had. Highly, highly respected during his time at Leinster. He's been coaching over in Japan since he retired, coaching a bit back home in Australia. And he played a massive role in driving the standards when a lot of the Ireland internationals were away. So I think he's a really good appointment as well. And Connacht's coaching team is starting to take shape as well, when you think they've got John Muldoon there too.
They most certainly have. And before we let you go, the Women's Six Nations probably hasn't gone to plan, has it?
No, that's putting it lightly. Yeah, it was a really disappointing defeat, Ruby. I think like that was one game they would have looked at, you know, as targeting the potential win. Look, I think like any conversation we have around the women's team, you need to mention the issues that are at play, and I think most people at this stage know about it in terms of the systematic issues that are going on from the top down. But at some stage, I think the players, and I think they want to be judged off what they're producing at the weekend, and what they produced against Italy at the weekend just wasn't good enough, and I think they'd be the first to admit. I think they had 27 missed tackles. They had more territory, more possession. They spent 6 minutes, I was watching it back this morning, they spent 6 minutes in the Italian 22 just before half time and came away with no points. And then straight after half time, Italy scored a try. They're 14-0 down, and it was too much of a mountain for them to climb. They've got England coming this weekend, and look, there's no point beating around the bush. That is going to be a tough afternoon. And then you're looking at Scotland for the last game, and it's going to be a wooden spoon decider. So that's the depths that the women's rugby has fallen. And while, you know, I've mentioned the four provinces won at the weekend, Ireland are Grand Slam champions, they're the number one ranked team in the world, the women's side of the house is not in good shape. And I think it's really important that we acknowledge that, because you think back to the days of them winning the Grand Slam, it's really not that long ago, but there's been a lost generation of players, and it's a long way back now because every other team is improving as well. And it's not just the gap between your Englands and your Frances, we've seen it already with Wales and Italy now as well. So it's really, really concerning.
Well, hopefully they can work on getting that issue balanced up. But that's all we have time for Rugby. Keane, thanks a million for coming in to us this evening. We'll be back after the break with all of the weekend's soccer.
Game on.
Football.
Now, you're very welcome back to the final part of Game on this Monday evening as we chat football. Alan Cawley, let's just dive straight in to the Premier League title race. And a simple question for you. Will Arsenal rue the loss of their leads the last couple of weeks?
Oh, absolutely, Shane, yeah. And up to this point, I've been so impressed with Arsenal, and everybody is asking me the question, and we've had many chats about it for the last number of weeks of who's going to win the league, and I've stuck with Arsenal throughout. And even despite the setback last week at Anfield, I still thought they had the mental capability of bouncing back, and I thought they would do that against West Ham. But you can't afford to be too up against West Ham and let that slip if you're trying to overcome Man City and in the race to win a title. And they really let themselves down, Shane, in that kind of second half performance as well, because there was plenty of time, even when they suffered the setback of conceding the two goals, there was still plenty of time for them to get themselves back into the game and go on and win the game. But they were so kind of tepid in their approach throughout that whole second half, and West Ham were comfortable throughout the second half. And when you think of a team that's trying to beat down the door to win a title, you'd expect them to be throwing the kitchen sink at West Ham. And as I say, West Ham were comfortable. West Ham played quite well, to be fair. It was almost like the old West Ham under Moyes. But in terms of what's breathing down their neck as well with Man City, you can't afford to be slipping up when you're 2-0 up, especially against West Ham.
So Arsenal are 2-0 up in 10 minutes. City are 3-0 up in 25 minutes. Arsenal missed a penalty. But City were hanging on even more than Arsenal were.
They were, but they still got the job done, Ruby. Yeah, and sometimes I don't know if it's a mindset at times, and it becomes nearly, when you go take the 2-0 lead, and I felt this as well against Liverpool, that because they're playing so well, Arsenal, and something similar with City scoring 2 or 3 after 15-20 minutes, and I don't know, do they get lulled into a false sense of security then, because things are so easy that you just switch off for that split second, and it only takes a split second at top level football or sport, and you can allow your opposition back into the game. That was what we seen yesterday at West Ham, because for 40 minutes Arsenal were cruising, absolutely cruising, and you're thinking there's no way back here for West Ham. And if somebody had to say to me after the first half an hour, this will end 2-2, I would have laughed at them. Because Arsenal,
does that make it more frustrating? Sorry to jump across you, but because they were so dominant and they were cruising so much, that it wasn't a case of that it was two quick fire goals. It was a dominant display and that lead.
And it was the exact same against Liverpool, Shane, up until the point where Xhaka got involved with Trent, and that changed the whole dynamic of the game as well. But they were absolutely cruising against Liverpool too. So to do it 2 weeks on the trot, and that's the only thing, like, to answer Ruby's question, that's the only thing I can put it down to, that you almost get lulled into this false sense where you're just, it's so easy that you just switch off. And as you say, Leicester, to be fair to them, they're fighting for their lives, so they're trying to scrap against anything they can pick up, and they put them under a bit of pressure. But the big difference is, regardless of the pressure, City still got the job done and got the 3 points, whereas Arsenal didn't.
I know that. I more meant the pressure of it, Alan. So Arsenal get two up, and then obviously West Ham score and they can't get out of the rut. Chelsea were 3-0 up. Leicester got one back. Then Pratt missed. Madison missed. When City got on a roll, when Leicester got on a roll, City couldn't get off the back foot either.
Yeah, and that's how games can change in a split second, Ruby. Like, as I say, you can go from one extreme to the other, because as we said, with Arsenal for a half an hour against West Ham, it was something similar. City for a half an hour, they're 3-0 up, absolutely dominating. It only takes an incident to happen in a game and the whole dynamic can change, and that's what we've seen over the last 2 weeks with the two clubs. You said, is it pressure? I definitely think it's pressure with Arsenal. I'm not so sure it is with City, because you have players there who have won everything in the game, and obviously they're so used to being down this stretch, and that's why I think now when it comes to the crux of it, they will get the job done ultimately. Whereas Arsenal, to be fair to them, have nobody in that squad really who have the experience of going on to win a league title, and I definitely think it's pressure now at this point with them, because it can happen once and you can nearly allow for it because it's Liverpool and it's Anfield, and obviously they're a very, very good team and you're away from home. You can't allow for that away to West Ham if you're trying to chase down a league title. So I can only put it down to pressure, a lack of concentration, switching off, whatever phrase you want to put on it. But ultimately, it's going to cost them that result. I firmly believe that now. And I've stuck up for Arsenal all season. I was just so disappointed with them yesterday to be 2-0 up and let that slide.
I'm very much looking forward to our chat Wednesday week and punch us down ahead of Manchester City versus Arsenal. But for now, are you jumping ship? You were singing Arsenal all along.
I was, yeah.
And now, is this the turning point for you?
Yeah, it's not that I'm jumping ship. As I said, I've stuck up for them all along, but I just think that's going to be a fatal blow yesterday. As I said, you can allow for it against Liverpool mainly and you get out with the point. And I even said here Friday night, you might look back at that towards the end of the season and think it was actually a point gained, despite the fact that there were two up against Liverpool. But certainly yesterday, that's 3 points dropped. Absolutely, 100%. There's no other way of putting that. And as I said, just to let that slip, Shane, and psychologically as well, the damage that will do, because I've mentioned pressure already being on them. There's going to be huge pressure on them now. You're facing into a game against Southampton. Obviously, they should bounce back. But you're City then in the next game on that Wednesday night, and the momentum that they've built up, City, over the last few weeks as well, both Champions League and the league. And I actually felt that that would be a big advantage for Arsenal as well, the fact that they were fresh going into the games, but you have to win the games. It's no good being fresh if you're not winning the games. And I thought that might be a little bit of distraction, the fact that City are still firing on all fronts. It actually looks like it's an advantage for them now, because the momentum that they've built up, and they're just bouncing from game to game, whatever the competition, and they look so strong.
Right, so that means the title race is wide open. The race for third, United bounce, 2-0 ahead of Nottingham Forest, back to 59 points, 3 clear of Newcastle, who got hockeyed by Aston Villa 3-0.
Yeah, and they were hockeyed, Ruby. I mentioned, obviously, at the intro there that when we were having the chat about the weekend stuff, Unai Emery, and he's done an unbelievable job, Unai Emery. He really has. When you think of where Villa were when he came in, mid-table, kind of hovering around, all doom and gloom, and he's brought them right up the table, so he has. And 5 wins on the trot, and they were comprehensive winners as well, because they absolutely battered Newcastle. It's a major setback for Newcastle, but obviously Spurs being Spurs, losing to Bournemouth, it doesn't probably feel as bad now, the defeat, because they're still 3 points clear of them. Aston Villa have given themselves a little bit of a chance of maybe, if they can keep up the momentum of those wins, of maybe chasing down Newcastle and Spurs. But I still think you would have to say Newcastle are in the driving seat, because you just don't know what you're getting with Spurs. They've been so disappointing. I'm actually disappointed with the manager as well, because he was the understudy to Conte, and you would think when you get your big opportunity, and I was surprised that he got the opportunity, and I don't like to see an assistant take over like that when you're already with a manager. I just don't think the optics of that are good. I think you should walk with the manager as well, but he's got his chance, Stellini, and they're literally the exact same. Nothing has changed. So surely you think, like, he has some sort of idea on the game, or was it just a carbon copy of whatever Conte was doing? He has the same mindset. And I'm so disappointed with them as well. Bournemouth, I probably should have mentioned Gary O'Neill as well, doing a phenomenal job. And they were brilliant on Saturday to win 3-2 as well and climb right out of the relegation. So I'd still have, I think United will get there, and I'd still have Newcastle out of the others, Ruby, to get the fourth place.
Yeah, but Brighton have 2 games in hand. That puts them on 55 points if they can win both of those. 1 behind Newcastle. They beat Chelsea at the weekend. Are you overlooking them?
Probably am a little bit, yeah. And probably wrongly as well, because you look at the job Zerbe has done since he's gone in as well. Absolutely phenomenal. Penny for Graham Potter's thoughts.
I should have stayed in Chelsea. There's his thoughts. Or should have stayed in Brighton, I mean.
He should have stayed in Brighton, and he should have stayed in Chelsea.
He couldn't stay in Chelsea. He got booted out there. I meant he should have stayed in Brighton. What about the other end, Alan? Who's gone? Southampton gone. Leicester as good as?
I think the bottom three, the way we see it right now, are the three that will go down, Ruby. I think Everton will get up because of Dyche. I still think Leeds will have problems, but I think the three below them are worse, and I think the three that you have at the moment, Forest were poor enough yesterday on a bad run of form as well, can't buy a win. I think the three that we see at the bottom now will be the three that'll get relegated.
We are very stuck for time. Just in a word, Leeds and Liverpool's this evening. Alan, who's going to win?
I think Leeds will beat Liverpool tonight.
Okay. Unfortunately, I can't even press you on that. I can't even press you because I do want to get in the League of Ireland, because we've only got a minute left. Two cracking Dublin derbies on Friday evening. Pats beat Bows 3-2 and Rovers came from 2 down to draw 2-2 in Tala against Shells. But Dundalk Derry 2-2 draw on Sunday. But the major talking point from that is the Dundalk manager himself, Stephen O'Donnell, coming out and criticising the AstroTurf pitch. That is a case of, not just a case of teams not enjoying playing football there, but it's causing injuries. I mean, I'm right in saying you played there. Like, what's it like? And perhaps is this the end of Astro pitches in the league?
I'd love to see it being the end, Shane. I don't think there's any place for them whatsoever. Whatever about training sessions, and especially obviously the weather that we suffer throughout the year here, I have no problem with them as using them for training, but certainly not at elite level. And we've obviously spoken a lot about elite level sport and participants and athletes throughout the show tonight, and you can't have lads playing on those Astros at an elite level, and especially the one of the standard of Dundalk's. It's absolutely dreadful, Shane. I played up there for a year. I suffered an injury myself, a bulging disc, because we were training on it every day of the week, and I put it purely down to the fact that the injury I suffered was down to that pitch. There's just no give on it. It's like playing on carpet here, like that we see in the studio. And Stephen O'Donnell, whatever about the spectacle of the actual game itself on those, now it's causing the problems of all the injuries as well, and I agree wholeheartedly with him. And I also think as well it's hampering Derry City and the way they play, because they're a real free-flowing team with loads of technical players, and that pitch up there causes them so many problems, and the proof is in the pudding as well as regards their results. Last year away from home, they picked up 36 points away from home and only 30 at home. And when you think of a team to finish second in the league, straight away, if you were to ask 100 people that, 99 of them will tell you that their home form would be better than their away form. But it's not the case with Derry City, and I put it down to the pitch. And even off a small sample size of their games already this season, Derry. They lost two at home last weekend as well. It's the same scenario for them. Their away form is better than their home form. And as I said, I put it down to the pitch. That one is slightly better, Astro in Derry, compares to Dundalk. Dundalk is dreadful, but I still don't think there's any place for those pitches in the league, no.
OK, we'll be interested to see how that one turns out. Alan Colley, thank you very much. Sinead, that is all we have time for. Just before I pull my fader down and hit the break, big congratulations to Larne in Northern Ireland, to our first time league champions for the first time in Ireland since Drogheda in 2007 in the League of Ireland. Sinead, big thanks for Ronan Lawler, Laura Lee Davis, Alan, thank you, Ruby, thank you. Better the Silva's up next, so stay tuned to 2FM, but from all of the Game On team, it is bye for now. RTE 2FM.